We're going to talk a little bit about the state of downtown. That's next on the Access Louisville podcast. Thanks for joining us. My name is David Mann. Access Louisville is a weekly podcast from Louisville Business First. Each week we bring you the latest news and plenty of sharp opinions. What's going on here in Louisville, Kentucky? Got a different show for you this week. Instead of the usual roundup of local news, we got an interview coming up with Louisville Business First editor Shay Van Hoy and Doug Owen, Senior Vice President and Principal Broker at JLL. They're going to talk about the state of downtown. Then after that, we're going to come back with a little more news for you. But for now, I'm going to throw it over to the interview with Doug Owen and Shay Van Hoy. Take it away.
Welcome to the Access Louisville podcast executive interview with Doug Owen, who is Senior Vice President at JLL here in Louisville. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you, Shay.
So today we're going to talk a lot about downtown. We've written a lot of stories, not only recently, but over the past couple of years, obviously with COVID and social unrest, and but it's kind of bubbled back up again, especially in our coverage. You deal with a lot of tenants downtown and broker a lot of deals downtown, so if you could set the stage for us, how do you see the current state of downtown as far as commercial real estate goes?
Sure. So I think, first off, let's say that I think the headlines maybe mislead some people into what the state of the downtown is. We've had some big headlines about companies moving or moving out of their headquarters, most notably Humana. But if you look at the ground level, we are seeing a significant uptick of companies looking at coming into downtown. So we've had some new moves into downtown. I think Forvis was the biggest. They moved to the top floor of the PNC Tower. Now we've got, I would say, 10,000 to 20,000 square foot tenants looking around downtown. And then, of course, you've got the Corps of Engineers that's going to move into the core of downtown for 150,000 feet. So it is not necessarily always what you read. I think, from the ground level, downtown is really very much on the upswing.
Awesome. And we'll get to the core here in a little bit. And just to jump back to Forvis, if you want to check out kind of what that looks like, check out our website. I went to their sort of red carpet opening thing. It's awesome views from up there from all sides, all four sides of east, north, east, west, south. Great views of the river and great views of the other downtown towers. So in your opinion, what in attracting tenants, you mentioned some are interested. What's downtown's biggest plus right now, and what's a big minus that is hindering more activity?
Sure. So you just mentioned Forvis and you mentioned the views, and that's people move into downtown for the views, and that's what you get in the towers. In the suburban market, you're up 2-3 floors and you're basically looking at a parking lot. The other part of a suburban building is more than likely you're getting in your car to go to lunch, and you're not having that much activity. In downtown, you're parking, if you're not using public transportation, you're parking your car in the morning and then you can walk for lunch. So we've got a number of different restaurants, food trucks, which I tend to like. I like the variety of the food trucks. But then as you get down to as a corporate leader or an employee, the towers are really accelerating their effort to attract tenants. And what they're doing is investing millions, and we're talking in the tens of millions, to add amenities, to really be partners now with their tenants and make it a place where employees can work. So if you're looking for amenities in office buildings that benefit your employees, that make them happy, that make them want to come into work, that's what the downtown towers offer. And they have a host of different offerings. In the suburban market, you might have a common conference room, and right, that's kind of the extent of it. In downtown, you've got fitness areas, you've got like your building here, you've got an outdoor roof deck, which is just, it's got commanding views, and it's a fantastic and nice weather. You also have, separate lounges. A lot of employee mandates may say you have to come to the building, right, but you may not have to actually go to your office. So they've created other workspaces. So you're kind of on campus, if you will, but you're not stuck in a cube. Mm-hmm. You've got coffee shops on site. You've got fitness centers. So you, it's really kind of a one-stop shop, if you will, in terms of being in a downtown building.
Right. And like you said, our building's a great example. We're in 500 West. We moved in October. And Doug was just asking me when we were walking back to the podcast room, we are going into our permanent space in a couple of weeks. And this building, if you, if you're a listener and haven't been in, it's they've added a ton of amenities, a golf simulator, a gym, the outdoor patio that you mentioned, happy hours, things like that too, that aren't physical, but to gather people on the fourth floor. Biggest minus, what are you seeing there?
Well, let me, you mentioned happy hour, which yeah. I've been pushing. I think Rebecca Fleischaker, who heads Downtown Partnership, she is starting a happy hour in the plaza area, 400 right. West Market, the old Aegon Tower, depending on what you call it, yeah. how old you are. And so that's, I think, is going to be a great gathering. So I think, you know, a plug here for the partnership. They're doing God's work in terms of turning downtown around.
Right. And tonight, real quick, as we're recording this, tonight's the first one, April 11th, I think. And okay. then they go on through the summer.
All right, great. Yeah. So hopefully yeah. we'll have, by the time this airs, we'll yeah. have good attendance.
Yeah.
The biggest minus is, and it's never a positive thing to talk about, but what I hear from existing downtown tenants from or prospective downtown tenants are the two things, and it's been this way since COVID. It's the homeless problem, and I don't mean tents, because I think we've done a good job in getting the tents out, but it's kind of the vagrants walking the city, mm-hmm. and then it's the and then the panhandlers off at East Intersection. And I think people with the panhandling don't often understand that most of those people are for-profit people, but it's not the image you want to portray in terms of coming into downtown, is having somebody greeted by a panhandler, and then kind of, you know, we've got some mentally ill people walking the street. And so that's where the city really needs to focus. And I know it's not a popular opinion, but it is having an impact on tenants in downtown. And what it projects is to the employer and to the employees is safety. Right. And that has been, you know, when Rebecca's with partnership has done surveys, the number one thing is safety is what employers want for their employees and what those employees want. And, you know, that is either, you know, adding additional police or, you know, controlling, you know, some of the street population in downtown. But I will say it is, we are 170, 180 degrees from where we were at the beginning of this administration. So I think this administration has really, you know, taken heed of that and are doing a great job. I personally feel very safe in downtown, have never had an issue. I don't know anybody that has had an issue. It's just that perception.
Right.
And that's a big gap.
Yep. Yeah, I'm downtown 4 days a week, and I agree with you. I like coming downtown. I've not had any issues. But, you know, there is this perception thing that we've written about a lot. Well, moving to residential and talking about getting people to live downtown, we had a cover story a couple weeks ago that examined the, you know, possibility of office to residential conversion. It's happening very quickly in Cincinnati. In fact, our sister paper, the Cincinnati Business Courier, got booted out of their tower that's going to be converted to residential. How hopeful are you that we're going to see that trend adopted? I know, you know, the Underhills are trying to get the Starks building, you know, which is vacant right now, turned into market rate apartments with an artist flair. But there are other towers too that we had developers say, you know, this tower would be good for redevelopment. So do you think we're going to see that like other cities have?
So I know we are going to see it, and I'm seeing it. We're seeing it now. You know, it takes at least a year to get a building under contract and to get plans approved, and people tend not to make an announcement until things are happening. So, you know, that is happening on the base level. Most of those are the older buildings, maybe the Main Street style, not the towers. So that is happening. There is lender appetite for that. There is less lender appetite for office product right now, and that's not Louisville, that is nationwide. One of the hindrances in conversions is it's a double-sided coin. So the Louisville rents, residential rents, compared to the rest of the country in our region, are substantially lower. So our cost of living is much lower. What happens is, because those rents are lower, it does take a substantial amount to convert these. The rents that some of those developers need is significantly higher than what the rents are in Louisville. So we've got this space that can be converted to residential. There's a demand for residential, but because, and it's our, it's great for Louisville, we have this low rent, low cost of living. It's difficult for developers to pencil this out and to make it work. And that is Louisville, but it is in other cities as well. And the federal government, I know enough to be dangerous, but they are, you know, they're looking at, you know, billions in incentives and or loans to make this happen. And I know the mayor just secured $100 million from the state. When we're talking about converting some of these office towers or these larger office buildings, I mean, you're not talking in the hundreds of millions, you're talking in the billions.
Right.
So it is a federal level that needs to happen. And that, and I think every city is going to be looking at that. I do believe hotel conversions for one or two of the towers would prove out faster for the lender. If you talk to Cleo Battle at the Louisville Convention and Visitors Bureau, we need, I think you all have covered it, 3,000 or so more rooms for our convention business. Our tourism is crazy. So it would be my expectation that maybe one of the towers that, that we're talking about that's vacant maybe goes to hotel before it becomes residential. But I do think, and we are seeing kind of residential conversions on the Main Street type property or those older historic properties like the Starks that you mentioned.
Right, and I think this would be a good time. I didn't want to, you know, let you go without talking about the Humana Tower, which Humana has, you know, said they're going to vacate, move employees around. It would that be hotel possible, or what, you know, what could you foresee? Is it going to stay office? I know also, you know, there's some structural work that's been going on, and there was a lawsuit between Humana so and the architect, but what do you, you know, what's your crystal ball on Humana?
I get asked crystal ball questions a lot, and those are hard to answer. I have, you know, quite frankly, I have not been inside the Humana building in a number of years. From an office conversion, I'm not sure. I mean, we have two other buildings, Meidinger Tower and LG&E, that are kind of watch list struggling assets at the moment. So you've already got, say, 600,000 to 700,000 square feet of potential vacant office space in the towers. So if you added, you know, another 550,000 from the Humana Tower, I'm not sure there's an appetite for that.
Right.
Louisville government has been, you know, throwing around the ball. I know Jeff O'Brien's talked about saying, hey, maybe we need to consolidate all of our offices into one building. So maybe that's an option for them. Not knowing the physical attributes of the building. And when you talk about converting to residential, I mean, one of the biggest issues is code and how the elevators operate and can it be separated? The HVAC system. I mean, all these buildings were designed to be office buildings. They weren't designed to be 24/7 residential. And the one stop is always plumbing. And so when you have an office tower, you have a single stack of plumbing.
Right.
When you have a residential building, you have this web of plumbing because everybody has, they've got a couple of bathrooms, they've got kitchens, they've got another sink, and that becomes, you know, almost cost prohibitive. And so you have to look at, can we take an elevator out of service? And there's, you know, to run all those plumbing stacks through, you know, with the Humana building not knowing its actual construction, I can't really say it would be ideal for hotel or for residential. Looking at it from the outside, I think it would be a great condo, residential, or hotel. But I can't give you an expert opinion on that.
Right. Well, talking about downtown residents a little deeper, one thing I always ask, you know, I've asked Pat Malloy this, just kind of in a side conversation, that sort of thing, is kind of what I call the chicken and the egg riddle. We need more downtown residents, but to attract them, we need more amenities, not like tourism amenities, like, you know, grocery store, maybe more pharmacies, a place to buy a nice pair of pants. You know, retail, I guess, is the way. But how do you get those amenities, those retailers, without the people? So I don't know if that's really a question, but what's the appetite for retail downtown?
It's definitely a conversation point. I think you have to get, you know, you've talked to Pat, you got to get Pat to open his checkbook, probably. Yeah. There is a demand for retail. So we are seeing on our side, we're seeing an increased appetite for restaurants, bars. So that side is growing. But you mentioned, you know, the shopping and all that. That is definitely a chicken or the egg. And Louisville's been this three-legged stool for decades with one leg longer. It was historically office tenants. Excuse me. Now it's tourism. We do need to get the residents back in here. The retailers, you mentioned grocery. I mean, the grocery store, if we were to give a grocery store free space, free rent, that still wouldn't work for them because their number one cost is spoilage. And so without a significant headcount, you'd have to ask a grocer what that number is. You know, it doesn't make financial sense for them to open it.
Right.
Because it has nothing to do with rent or the space, but it's not having enough residents down here. Residents do want to be able to walk to the grocery, but how many of us in the city walk to our grocery? I mean, most of us are getting in the car.
Right.
So I know that's a hot button for a lot of people. I don't think it's the end-all be-all, and I also don't think it's a silver bullet that if you bring a grocery, you're going to get residents. I think it's going to evolve much the way Nulu did, which is really just kind of a downtown in and of itself. I mean, it's two blocks, three blocks off the core. You're going to bring in, you know, more bars and restaurants that are less geared to the tourism, meaning less national branded, more local restaurants, more local bars that residents are going to like. And then as they grow with that, you're going to see more demand. But we need residential space. I mean, I don't think we have many available residential units in our downtown. So we definitely need more living units. And I think as those evolve and as those are developed, those developers are going to add the retail component to those buildings that their residents want. So it'll be not one comes first, one comes second. It'll kind of be a joint progression.
Got it, yeah. Well, in the sake of time, I want to jump ahead because we promised we'd talk about the Army Corps of Engineers. Joel wrote the story last week, I think, that you know, they're putting out basically RFPs for 150,000 square feet of space. And that was kind of down farther in the release. And when I saw that number, I was like, holy cow, like, I think this is a push for us. You know, what options are out there just, you know, from a space consideration? You talked about a couple of the more vacant towers, but, you know, where do you think they're going to be looking because they want to stay in the CBD?
So first, I'm really happy to hear they're staying in the CBD, and I think that's great news. I'm also glad that they're moving from where they are into more of the central, more northern part of the downtown area. And also, you use CBD. I'm sort of stopping to use CBD because we're talking about, it's no longer the central business district. You know, we're talking about it becoming a residential area and a tourism area. So it's more of a downtown than it is CBD. But they will look at, or their options will be all of the above. It is going to be every building. Most of our buildings have space that can fit 150,000 feet. It will narrow because not all will have 150,000 square feet contiguous. And then the government or the Corps has some very strict requirements on how the floors are shaped, how they're laid out, environmental. They also need to be Energy Star. So as we weed through those requirements, the field is going to get much smaller. It will be a tower. That's the only thing that can accommodate that size right now. But which tower it will be, we won't know. I mean, I think that the RFPs are due at the end of this month, and then they're going to make a decision over the summer. Overall, I'm seeing the market consolidate around kind of the four trophy office towers, if you will. That's PNC Tower. That's your building, 500 West Jefferson, 401 South 4th, which just announced a major renovation, and then 400 West Market, yep, which is the former Aegon Tower. And what makes those trophy towers? Those are buildings that are adding these multi-million dollars worth of amenities. They're also, and the key here, they're financially stable. So they've got long-term loans or they have no debt, but they are going to weather the storm. They're going to be here. They can, you know, what does financial stability mean? It means that when you as a tenant or a prospective tenant want to build out your space, they can afford to do that for you.
Right.
And then they're going to be able to afford to maintain it. And I think that is the the two key things that office tenants want, aside from the amenities we talked about, is stability, and they want to be taken care of. They want to be coddled. And so that, I think, is a way to narrow what the core is going to end up. Might be one of those four buildings, because one of the requirements is financial stability.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, and you mentioned, I think this also helps too, like with the old Brown and Williamson Tower, is, you know, that purchase price was less than $10 million. And so you've got money that 15, 20 years ago would have went into buying the building, now can go into renovating the building because they're just selling for so much less.
Correct.
Now.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, we're going to move on to the lightning round. We like to do this with guests and have a little fun. So you just mentioned that walking to downtown restaurants. What is your favorite downtown restaurant?
So I can't give you just one.
All right, give us more than one.
And I try to be a little healthy, but I love In Season. And I am a local guy. I really much prefer local restaurants. So I hit In Season a lot. I hit Green District and Pogihana a ton.
Got it.
I am a glutton for a good cheeseburger, and I do love food trucks. Excuse me. Black Rock Grill is my go-to. Every time I see him in front of PNC Tower,
yep.
I get a big
they
burger.
They were there yesterday or the day before when I walked down. What's a city with a downtown that you really enjoy or admire?
New York is my obvious favorite. It's what everybody, I think, aspires to be. But the other cities that I think are great are cities like Austin, Oklahoma City. And what makes those cities great? Phoenix. They have two-way streets in downtown. They're tree-lined. And then they have light rail transportation. And that's what those cities can offer their residents and their business people. And I think that's a fantastic way to look at downtown.
Yeah, and we're looking at, more and more streets. We actually also did a story on two-way street conversions. You know, and I know Main Street's being examined from Wenzel to 2nd, and the, 9th Street Reimagined and Broadway are going to have some aspects of that. So, definitely studies have shown that's beneficial for business.
It's important. Yeah, it's
and safety and pedestrian safety.
Yeah, the one-way streets used to be for getting people out of downtown, but if we want to be a residential area, we need to be able to get people around downtown, and that's two-way streets.
Right. So you have guests in town for a day or two. Where do you take them in Louisville? What do you like to show off?
So everybody likes to go see Churchill Downs. I mean, that is the number one thing. And then the other part is bourbon. So if Churchill isn't running, everybody is always wanting to do some sort of bourbon tourism. So it's Main Street. As far as restaurants, we'll hit some downtown restaurants. There's some great restaurants in Nulu and then up Bardstown Road. I mean, Jack Fry's is always my go-to.
Yeah, it's funny, too, when you get people from out of town that just think that you can hop on any bourbon tour, like, the day before, and you're like, no, you gotta plan ahead if you, like, you know, for something like an Old Forester tour or something like that.
It is amazing. Old Forester's 90 days out, I think.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I really like it.
I love the Old Forester tour and that you can see every aspect,
yeah.
You know, from the start to the rickhouse there, the mini rickhouse they have. All right, last question. We talked a little bit about amenities and talked about our tower here. What are the top two or three amenities that tenants are asking for right now?
So the number one is outdoor space, and there's not even a close second. And so that is what employees want. They want to be able to work outdoor when it's nice. So like your roof deck, the plaza at PNC or the plaza at 400 West Jefferson. The second is an offsite work area and probably a coffee shop within the building or a lounge area or both. I mean, those are kind of the two top. After that, you get into showers, fitness centers, you know,
yep.
Minor amenities like that. But outdoor, that's what brings everybody in.
We've one day we're having internet trouble. It happened to be nice, so we went down to the fourth floor and all worked outside. And then I agree about the meeting space. Even if I don't go to our coffee shop on the first floor, there's just places to have conversations on the first floor. People don't have to come up to your office and that sort of thing.
Just locally, Humana and Brown-Forman are really leading the way on that. And I think I've been on Brown-Forman's campus a little bit more, but they have tons of little meeting spaces.
Yep.
And so you might work for Brown-Forman, but you may never go to your office, I guess, and you can just go to these different areas around campus, which really makes it nice. So it gives me, if I'm a remote worker, I feel better about going to the office because I'm not stuck in a cube. I'm still doing whatever
right.
I want to do.
Right. Well, Doug, we definitely appreciate your time and your expertise. Thanks for coming on the show, and we check in with you often about things going on all over Louisville in terms of real estate. So, Doug, thanks for your time.
Great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks, Doug, and thanks, Shay. Joining me now is Stephen Schmidt. He's the, I guess we won't call you the banking reporter, but you've been covering this over the last year, the development of Old National Bank following the shooting about a year ago on April 10th, 2023. You recently sat down with the leadership team at Old National Bank for an interview. I guess what was your kind of your purpose in going into that discussion, and what was it? What did you kind of get out of it?
Yeah, so I was the banking reporter. We've kind of shifted around duties, but beats, I should say. But yeah, when that happened, I was the banking reporter, and I had the interesting thing is that I had never really spoken with anybody from Old National when the shooting happened. They were on my list of people to reach out to, have a cup of coffee with and kind of see what's going on with their bank. And then I remember going up, happened to be in the Nulu area, I think like maybe a couple of days. And I think, I was asked to go and get some photos, cause I happened to be in the area. So I just remember going up there, seeing the wooden crosses and seeing all the flowers and all of that. And just, it was a very, emotional thing.
Sure.
And so I just remember that moment. And then we wanted to do the story, but we wanted enough time to pass. Mm-hmm. I know that I had met one of the people I talked with in the story was Darren McCauley, who's been there for a long time. And I met him in an event, and he was like, yeah, he's like, our corporate PR team won't let anybody talk with anybody, but it's like, I just kind of said, like, when you're ready to talk, I would like to talk. And so that time actually happened a couple of weeks ago. They actually came to our it was Darren, and it was Tommy Wallace, who's one of the new members of the leadership team on the commercial banking side, and it was Dennis Heishman, and then somebody from Evansville who drove over for the interview, and then it was Julie Anderson, who works within the four branches in Louisville. And mm-hmm. So we all sat down, and I told them basically that this was, I've covered a lot of different things, but I guess fortunately I never really talked to people who are in their situation with a mass shooting. And so before I even, we started recording things, we just kind of sat and just kind of talked about like what questions I'd ask them. That basically we just sat around with the six of us in the room, and I just asked them some questions, and they were really, I think I was, the responses I was, I could tell that they, put a lot of thought into what they were saying, and you could still see the emotions were just so raw, even
a year later.
And so, yeah, that was one of the more memorable interviews that I've had, and I've been doing this for, I've been interviewing people for a while.
Yeah.
And so this is something that I'll always remember, and I was just it was one of those things where I interviewed them on a Monday, and I wrote it the next day while everything was fresh in my mind, and I just kind of just didn't leave my chair until it was done. And it was something that I think it really kind of just shows how, they're still struggling, and they're still going to be struggling, but they also are putting, they've hired a large team, mm-hmm. and they are looking to move forward. And so that balance of honoring the past and looking toward the future, I think, is something I really tried to touch upon.
And that's tough. But journalists, you want to get the story, but you want to be appropriate. You want to give people time to grieve. There's varying levels of that. And I think, just given them that they've had this year to kind of think about it, and they definitely have a direction. So I thought it was an interesting piece. Shay, any thoughts on the Old National anniversary and the piece that Stephen just finished?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think Steve did an awesome job on it. And, you know, just a little bit behind the scenes, you know, we had multiple months-long on-and-off discussions with the folks at Old National about, you know, did they want to talk about it? What were they going to do? And I think from there, you know, they're based in Chicago and Evansville, and so a lot of their marketing and PR folks are over in Evansville. You know, I think they were still trying to figure out what they wanted to do. And so they were kind of like, you know, we don't know if we want to sit down and talk. We might. And then once they finally kind of finalized their plan, which including closing all the branches here in Louisville on April 10th, that, you know, they said, we want to sit down and kind of tell you why we're doing this and beyond. And so, you know, sometimes these things take a little more work than you know, what you see on the end. But I think I was really proud of how it turned out and how, you know, how Steve approached it. And we just, I don't know if you all mentioned this, you can edit this out if not, but I don't know if you all mentioned this, but you know, we did unlock it for readers, so anyone can read it. It's not behind our paywall.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. So well, I think that's it. A little bit of a different show for you this week with the interview and just talking about this one story. But we'll probably get back to our usual format next week, unless Shay's got any other big plans for us interview-wise. But I guess we'll see. So before we go, we'll do the usual thing here. Go around the room. Let us know where people can find you on social media. Shay, start us off.
Yeah, my name is Shay Van Hoy on X and also LinkedIn, and I'm also on Blue Sky, post there intermittently, so that's the only one out of ordinary.
Yeah. How about you, Steve?
Yeah, on X, I'm at BFLewSteve, and on LinkedIn, I'm at /SPSchmidt.
All right, and you can find me on LinkedIn under my real name, David A. Mann. If you like this podcast, you can find it on popular podcast services, including Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, and all the usual places. We are still looking for a sponsor, so if you're interested in that, get in touch with our advertising director, Doug James. That's at djames@bizjournals.com. D. James, just like you would think James is spelled, at bizjournals.com. All right, well, thank you very much, Shay. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Doug Owen. Thank you guys for listening to us at home, and we will see you next time. Bye.